Hi, everybody. Dennis Black here of Black and Wyatt Records. Welcome to the Black and Wyatt Records podcast. Today, Memphis artist and filmmaker Mike McCarthy and his co-host Paul Woodard, a.k.a. Polly Cyclone, talk to Brad Postlewaite and Brandon Robertson of the Memphis group Snow Globe about their new dual EP releases, The Climb and The Fall, as well as their Black and Wyatt vinyl release, Doing the Distance, and the history of the band. Now, here's Mike McCarthy.
That might not have covered okay. All the concert.
One, two.
Well, listen, we got two members from Snow Globe here today. Brandon, who I've known, seems like forever. I can't believe you'd have even agreed to do this.
I almost didn't. I tried to get out of it.
Yeah, I can tell you're uncomfortable, but it's okay. It's all right. And we got Mr. Postlewaite here.
Yeah.
Brad Postlewaite from Snow. Would you say you're a founding member?
Yep, both of us actually.
Both of you are. Two out of what, six?
Is it seven?
Seven.
How many founding members, or how many current members?
Maybe yeah. Paul could tell us. Paul Woodard down here at the end from Polycyclone. He's been going down a rabbit
hole. I understand in touring it was often four.
Yeah, it was. And then five once we got Nashawn, you know, started touring with us.
So the band is 25 years old.
Same
age as my daughter. Mm-hmm. So that gives me the context of that. Is it 25 consecutive years? Or are there pockets of inactivity which then actually lead to it being chapters of the band?
It kind of depends on when you consider the beginning of the band. Because Tim had a group in Knoxville called Liftoff that he played with. And then I was in Athens, Brandon and I, and then Brian Winrode, our original drummer, who actually came up with the name. And we played in Athens and kind of wrote a lot of the songs that ended up on the first record, Our Land Brains, there. And then Tim, you know, wrote like the other half with Liftoff, a number of them. And then we kind of got together and joined forces. So,
and then Tim wasn't even on one album, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's true. There was some drama there.
That's a chapter.
That's what we want to talk
mostly
about.
Mostly initiated by me. So.
Oh, yeah. Why would you have drama?
I don't know. Just
you seem like an why would you?
I've learned. I'm older and wiser now, but yeah.
Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah. We've always been friends and close friends. And yeah, I'd say we were always working on one thing or another for that entire period of time.
Yeah.
In terms of in the studio.
How many proper LPs, releases, or how many have there been? Is that, you have to think back.
That's a good question. Let's see.
It's like six or so. Six, eight,
maybe.
Six.
We could look it up on iTunes.
Now, is The Fall and The Climb your eighth and ninth contiguously? Right?
Yes, yeah. And then, you know, The Climb is an EP.
Is it The Fall before The Climb?
That's the way it worked out, yeah, I suppose.
Okay.
Were in any of the other earlier releases EPs?
Yes, we had one called No Need to Light a Nightlight on a Night Like Tonight.
I like that.
That's the most indie rock title I think I've ever heard. Whose idea was that?
Brandon.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that being my idea.
It was your idea. Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe that's why Reagan spent a year out or whatever.
Eight. It's eight full lengths, two EPs.
Okay. But you guys are have you ever been hated by the critics? Seems like you're pretty well liked.
We've had some critics make fun of us. Critics really? Making fun of other reviews. So somebody said that this was the pop album of the year once. And some critics really latched onto that one and just ripped that one up.
Play from the Bardot Records. Well, he like took out a full page ad that said pop album of the year with a question mark.
A full page ad.
I mean, it worked.
Before anyone had ever heard of us.
It ruffled some people's feathers, so they wrote about it, which then kind of was
I think it was Land Brains.
It was Our Land Brains, yeah.
Okay. Was that the period where you were in $5 Cover?
No, that was before. That was, 2001, 2002?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Way before.
It came out in 2002?
2002, I think, is when it came
recorded
out.
Recorded over from 99 to 2001.
There was, I think when we were completing Our Land Brains, we were basically all, I mean, I didn't live there, but I spent all the time, all my time. Yeah.
Well, the band was only 2 years old.
We moved from Athens back to Memphis, and then Tim moved from Knoxville to Memphis, and then there was that house over on Evelyn.
That's when Tim and I lived together there.
Is that when you lived with Jay Retard?
Okay. Yeah, that was where I moved when I came back from Athens, so that would have been like 2000, 2001. That sound to us, and you know, knew some of the people and played with some of the people involved in that. So,
and when I say that phase of music, it's really a genre. What you guys are doing, how would you describe what you're doing? Because you always read what other people call it, but what do you call it?
Right.
We never really called it anything. It's just we've had influences from all over the place, and we just kind of insert that into our music. I mean, I guess it's some kind of pop,
psychedelic pop, yeah. I guess.
But it's not real psychedelic to me.
I don't really think of it as psychedelic.
It's just really poppy. Well, but sometimes it's country. Sometimes it's like, got weird, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of all over.
It did really get less psychedelic after that first record. That's kind of the only one.
I was thinking about that. I listened to the new one today, and I was like, this is not psychedelic at all. There's no, like, weird shit flying through the my ears, you know.
And this is the new release that dropped at midnight, I guess, today?
I believe so. Or 4 a.m.
Which was off Climb or Fall? Need to Know.
That's off Climb.
So Need to Know, and this is the one I really zeroed in on, the piano line maintains sort of a conservative arrangement structure, while the horn and everything else kind of comes and goes and spirals around, sort of almost like a DNA strand around this straight piano riff. So if it was going to be psychedelic, I suppose that could be ascribed, but that's I don't call that... I just call that almost like jazz, really. It's more than psychedelia.
Our earlier records were definitely went in that direction on purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We wanted to make it weird, you know.
Were you on drugs?
Not really.
Easier to put in psychedelic aspects when you started adding synthesizers. Or was it more psychedelic before you got to synthesizers?
I kind of feel like that first record we were using, you know, home recording equipment and just doing it all ourselves, and we'd find weird workarounds to do what we wanted to do because we weren't using, you know, Pro Tools, I guess, was out then, but it wasn't really as widespread as it is now. And something about that, I think, lent itself to sort of it being more psychedelic and having this kind of interesting sound that the other records don't have.
Yeah, I mean, we really just used what we had available to us. I mean, we didn't have great equipment. We didn't have great instruments. We had a couple good mics, you know, but we just like to, you know.
Well, we did weird things. Like, I remember there was, you know, because we were the ones making it and there was no, like, engineer or studio or nobody paying for it and all that, we were just doing it. I remember, like, we do, like, set up a speaker on the other side of the room and then record it, you know, with a microphone in different places and then fade that in and fade the other thing out. And then,
yeah, we ran it through
old
record player made. Yeah, that was, I think, Smiles and Frowns. Yeah. That's kind of psychedelic, I guess.
Yeah, the experimentation of it all.
We could play something off the new record. You mentioned Need to Know.
If you just say the name of the song, I probably won't know what you're talking about.
Why not?
Because I've just never really learned the names of songs.
Yeah.
I mean, even then, they'd be like, hey, we're playing Miss June. And I'd be like, which one is that? What key is that in?
But it starts and you go, oh, that one.
Yeah.
Wait, did you play Miss June in $5 cover?
Yeah. I know Miss June, but that's just an example. But
$5, that rings a bell when you said Miss June. I'm like, okay, that's the $5 cover.
Yeah.
Performance, live performance. What do you want to play? And then we'll come back and talk about $5 cover.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we could do, you know, Need to Know.
Need to Know? Okay. This is off
The Climb.
The Climb that just dropped. It dropped around midnight tonight of Snow Globe. So let's go to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll feel like this is catchy, or but whether or not it would fit like on the radio with other songs, it's hard for me to tell because I just hear my voice and I'm like, ooh, ugh, you know, I should have done that better and whatever. Like,
right.
You know, I'm too self-critical, I guess.
Right. Well, even at this point?
I think when it comes to finishing a record and considering a song done, I always have to just be like, all right, I'm walking away. Everybody else says that's fine.
You know? Yeah. And do you tend to want to overproduce?
Yes. Left to my own devices. And I sort of did that with the last record before this one a little bit, you might say.
But we'll end up with thousands of tracks. If Brad is just left in a cycle, if you just let him get into the cycle, it'll just go and go.
Toby Vest and Pete Matthews, you know, got involved with the last record and at High Low, and it was over there on Cleveland. And that Toby in particular, is we started that record before Pete joined, but or before they joined forces. But Toby kind of got to know my issues when it comes to recording and how, you know, obsessive and sort of, I mean, it's fun though. It is fun to put a lot of tracks on a song and then fish through them and put like, you know, kind of, it's like an art in and of itself, I guess. But yeah, so he would kind of reel me in, and then we've developed a good working relationship, and Pete got involved, and yeah, they're just the two of them have really been, I think, helpful in terms of helping to reel us in.
How did you reach out to the guests that were involved in the making of these albums?
It's mostly people that we met one way or another.
Or people that we've kind of always been playing with.
This record was recorded over a period of
it was 5 years.
15 or so years. Some of these songs, not 15, some but 10.
This, yeah,
some of them are real, real old. They date back to, you can pick different records, like the Oxytocin record. Mm-hmm. Some of these songs came from that era. Mm-hmm. They were just, we didn't end up using them then.
It was actually, some of the songs actually date back to before Easily Fire. So that was right around when Tim was doing like In Tennis Shoes, because that record was being recorded there at the same time these songs were, some of them were being.
With Kevin Cubbins.
With Kevin Cubbins.
We didn't lose the Snow Globe record, but we lost the In Tennis Shoes record.
And so that, in Kevin Cubbins, it's definitely important to mention him, because he was really instrumental as an engineer on doing The Distance, and then pretty much everything from that up to when we started working with Toby and Pete. And that wasn't like a decision to go away from Kevin, because we love working with him. I think he was just getting really busy with a lot of other things. But Kevin Cubbins is kind of, we've always had, I think, when it comes to the studio, like a producer type engineer who's kind of like also feels like a member of the band. And you know, Kevin was that during those eras, during those records. And then Toby and Pete, you know, feel like that now.
Or Paul worked with Kevin.
I did a Halloween show, and they gave me some record time, and Kevin.
Great.
And there was a party there.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fun.
So he actually did, he did the engineering on a number of the songs on this record initially, and then we kind of went back and added some nuances and did some things. Other people that from back then that played on it, Mark Gunter Stewart and Paul Taylor did some drums on it.
But you're saying that Kevin came in and mixed this all the stuff together, or
he was just the original
guy
engineer.
Okay. So being the original engineer, he created sort of a tonal sameness or quality that made it cohesive.
That, and it also, I believe, almost entirely was recorded in that Easily building.
Yeah.
Because initially it was Easily before the fire, and then Easily after that. The fire, we managed to salvage a lot of the tracks, and we continued to work on it there. Then it kind of sat on the shelf for a while, and when Pete and Toby moved from High Low over to American Studio, which was in that building, we started working on it again. So that was, you know.
So what kind makes of interesting. What makes the band as a one thinking force go, well, it's been on the shelf long enough, and it's been a few years. Who starts that conversation, and who carries that ball?
I don't know. I think with this record, I just called folks and found some funds to use to pay for the studio time.
So money like really gets the conversation.
That's yeah. I mean, you know, there's a certain level of, I suppose, leeway that you know, an engineer or producer might give us just simply because we're working so, you know, so much with them. But yeah,
can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
I guess you'd say half of working on this record that occurred, you know, more recently. from about 2018 until now, right? I think, yeah, it was a cool experience. It was nice being back in that room, you know, working with Toby and Pete, really in you know, many ways the same environment that the record was started in with Kevin. So yeah,
it and this was an American Sound.
It was, yeah, but it was located in the Easley building.
A lot of people may not understand that. How did that work, or why did they decide to reuse the name and so forth? Or do you know?
The building itself was designed to be a studio, I believe, from the ground up. I think when it was built a long time ago.
The story is that it's the first building in Memphis that was made to be a studio.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First studio that was intent, you know, that wasn't an old theater or a bookstore or something like that.
Yeah.
This is Easley's that burnt.
Well, there was a fire at one point, but they recovered from that and continued afterward. Okay. There was just the, you know, some music was lost when that happened on this record, but Kevin actually worked his butt off to recover it. Mm. So cool. Yeah.
So all this span of music that's covering years for The Climb and The Fall, how did you separate songs for The Climb and for The Fall, or what was the thought process for that?
We had several different orders that we kind of tossed around, and part of it was looking at what songs seemed to transition well into others, you know, and which songs seemed to flow. In terms of separating it, that's kind of where I stepped back on some level, and, you know, I felt like I was too close to it at that point to make decisions about cutting songs and leaving them. So there were a few songs that got cut entirely, and then some that were intended to be kind of put aside for whatever the next thing we do is. And then we ended up just deciding, let's, you know, release all of it. So. Saying it's kind of neat that they were all recorded in that building. You know, I think that was part of the same echo chambers and things. And
right. Did you go back into a song from, say, 2003 or 4 or something and go, well, if we ended this in a different key, or if we changed the outro, then that would connect with the song that...
We did something like that with all of them. I mean, we took those original tracks and we either redid some of them or just overdubbed extra stuff. Brad would do new vocals. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like literally a song that was recorded over the course of, you know, 10 something years. Wow. Like the original tracks will be from whatever it was, 08. And then we did more 10 years later.
You haven't even had time to get feedback because you just dropped it today, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Yeah. My sister said she liked it.
That's what we know so far.
She says that all the time.
She sent us a group text.
Does everyone write? Certainly everyone contributes an arrangement, or do certain band members look for advice, or do people want to write songs, or how does it work?
I guess maybe a little of all of that. That period of time, like 2018, 2019, when we were in the studio, it was a lot of times all of us there. You know, if I remember correctly, Tim, I guess, was out of town. So whenever he could come in, we'd try to all rally and, you know, work. I believe that some of the songs were recorded live, actually.
Really?
Yeah, but just that's the bass, like, you know, the bass guitar, the drums, and the rhythm guitar part kind of thing, and then vocals overdubbed, a lot of times that is how we approach it, is kind of the layer, the, you know, sort of the Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, I guess, the way that
Jeff Lynne,
yeah, Jeff Lynne, the, I don't know, just read about how they recorded a lot of those songs, and it's kind of similar, you know, where they just get like the drum track, and then they move on to the next one, and none of it's like recorded live. It's all just,
yeah. I mean, you know, I would say probably a majority of Snow Globe's, you know, catalog has been done that way.
Yeah. I guess, so the song of mine that I think I probably am the proudest of on the record would be, I think it's called Beastly Blob. I'm sort of the same as you.
It's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
I like that one.
That one I think turned out pretty well. The lightness of your step, the sway of you, simple things. The day we fell in love, the sad and sweetest memories. Maybe it was me, maybe it's my fault. Against your will, I went and built a great big wall. Hard for me to see, hard.
I leave, can't help but think we'll never know. Now just look.
What determines the tone of the songs that are on The Fall and what are on The Climb?
It kind of feels like all one record to me.
Well, now that you have all the songs produced, will that make it easier? Does it make it easier for you guys to get together with your the group that you have with Neshawn and playing and all to perform? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would love to. It is difficult to organize it, but Sean, he picked up his horn and said he's been playing it some, and we haven't really discussed it. It does keep coming up, but I don't think anyone's against the idea of doing it. It's just that we've tried multiple times and it's been difficult.
It's like if we're gonna do a show, you know, we're not going out on tour. We're not doing multiple shows in a row. It's the kind of thing we have to rehearse for a month. Right. You know, it's a new full time job for that month leading up to it, and it's just kind of hard to do that right now since we all have our own.
Right.
You know, Tim's got a record label. He's in other bands. Brad's a doctor. You know, I do my thing. We all, you know, we've all got stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You brought us a song by Tim Reagan. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
Long Time Coming.
Okay. And why is it Tim here tonight?
Oh, you know, he was going to fly in, but...
Was he going to fly in for the podcast?
I think he missed the flight. That's what happened.
Since I saw your face, been a long time a coming, a long time a coming. A little light in the darkest place, a long time a coming, a long time a coming. And if you go in light, love will shine down its rays. Someone that I'd really like to see. Well, oh, it's been fun, and thanks for having me along. But it's time for me to make new memories. Saw you walking down the avenue, but you didn't see.
see me watching you. You convince yourself that you
We're back. That was Tim Reagan with Long Time Coming. And is that on The Fall or The Climb?
That's on The Fall.
Okay, so we might as well play a song from this record, right? So you want to talk about this, the Black and White release, since this is a Black and White podcast after all?
During that period of time, it's sort of these two records, you know, Our Land Brains and this one, kind of represent an era of the band where we were always together, you know, playing, practicing, hanging out, mm-hmm. and then going on tour. So it was probably the most cohesive period of time, you know, in terms of the existence of the band. This was recorded with Kevin Cubbins.
This was the follow-up to Land Brains. So like everything right up between Land Brains and this was all written then.
So what Black and White provided for you was a way to have a vinyl copy of the follow-up.
Oh, yes, yes.
So this is your sophomore.
Very, very grateful.
Yeah. Our pleasure.
Yeah.
So this was a sophomore release, mm-hmm. but these songs might not be included in a current set list if you were to play again.
Actually, we do play a number of them.
Yeah.
Loaded Gun, Miss June. There's Regime and Rock Song. I think we still play both. Yeah, we've played both of those at just about all of our shows, I'd say.
That I hope for a new direction.
I don't think it was our idea.
I think it happened after the $5 cover thing because there was talk about doing like spinoff shows or something. And then we were thinking, well, maybe we could pitch the idea of just doing like a, yeah, like a Hard Day's Night style.
It's too late for this advice, but I think you should have moved to Seattle and been in $5 cover Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like glommed, like Alice Cooper moved to Detroit. You could have tried to get
That's right.
You know, yeah. too late. Mm. All right, let's play another song. What else did you want to play?
Yeah, Willow Tree was one of the tracks. So that's a song.
I think we heard that today, Paul, right? About living in a willow tree?
It's Luke's song.
Well, it's actually Clay Qualls and Luke wrote it. Clay Qualls from the Dead Soldiers.
Okay.
It was his father, I believe, was a poet. I'm going to tell this wrong, but was, I believe, a poet or had some writings. And the initial lyrics, I know, came from that. And then Luke and Clay kind of worked it out. And yeah, it's a beautiful song. It's probably my favorite one on the record.
I remember it. Okay, so it's called
Willow Tree.
Willow Tree. Here we go. Okay, that was Willow Tree by Snow Globe, written by Luke and...
Clay.
Clay, Balls. Okay.
There was a period of time where we kind of started to head in a country direction. I guess it was after doing The Distance, maybe.
I don't know if we were... I mean, yeah.
That we were talking about trying to make like a, you know, sort of...
I don't think we were trying to head in a direction. It's like what we were saying earlier. That's what I was saying earlier, is that, yeah, we have influences from all over the place. And that record definitely was, or that Burrito Brothers... One of those Burrito Brothers records we listened to a lot definitely had a definite influence on a lot of the sound, like some of our guitar sounds and just some of the, I guess, sort of the twang that some of our songwriting had. But I wouldn't say we were ever trying to go into that direction, but we definitely drew from it.
Yeah, I grew up listening to the Beach Boys and the Beatles, in particular, in bluegrass. Those are my dad's three things he would just rotate through. But yeah, so a lot of Beach and Phil Collins. I have to throw Phil in there. We had
I was getting a lot of Prague.
And now you've got Paul's interest.
Those, you know, long trips to West Virginia with those four things just rotating in the car.
Was your dad a musician? Or?
He played the banjo, yeah. Yeah, he, you know, later he kind of focused on his career solely, and it was sort of a hobby that he had less and less time for, I think, as, you know, as me and my brother came along and started causing, you know, mischief and whatnot.
Did your brother play as well?
No, he had a keyboard. I was, you know, I got a guitar for Christmas one year and he got a keyboard. And of course I was angry that, you know, I wanted the keyboard. So I was like, the keyboard has a guitar sound on it. So he can play the guitar and he can play this. And I'm just stuck over here on the guitar, you know?
Right.
Anyway,
but your dad had no thoughts of you guys like recording albums one day, or maybe he did. I don't know.
I did try to play with him. Actually, my buddy Blair Combest and I tried to play with him one time, and he had not played the banjo probably in like 15 years.
We got him to record on something once though, didn't he?
We did.
Yeah, it was adorable because he got nervous.
He was getting nervous because he was like. Because he used to be really, really fast, and then he was kind of...
Like Foggy Mountain Breakdown fast. Yeah. You can't fake bluegrass.
Fun fact, the Boso, the Kickdown, that's the album title.
Yeah.
But we always have other names for it when we play them live. That's also, our live show version of it is called the Bluegrass Song. It's what we've always known it as, but when we put out the record, we decided we needed to give it a name.
Right.
So it's called the Boso / the Kickdown. Yeah. So listen to it and tell us if we fake bluegrass well
should,
enough.
Should we play it? Okay, let's play it right now then.
Certainly,
Let's play the Boso. Which stands for what? The banjo?
No, that's another story.
It's a reference to
Okay, here comes the Boso. So talk a little bit about Miss June and the whole $5 cover experience. And I was working on the crew with that. I got to see you guys perform. I even got to see you act.
Yeah, that was
you played a doctor.
Yep, that was a studio, also a studio engineer. Yeah, my buddy Josh Hicks. He was, he called me up one day. He's like, yeah, you should come to this, this movie this guy locally made. I think he was either dating or maybe they they were friends at that point, but Lindsay, you know, who's in it.
Yeah, from Porn Hungry.
Yeah. So we went to that showing, that initial debut showing that he did over there, I think at the Ridgeway Theater.
We're talking 2000.
No, it was our friend Rob Lucas.
I love Rob, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot that was the same. Anyway, so that was...
So Craig Brewer, you're talking about Craig
Brewer. Yeah, so kind of met him and got to know him back then, and then he went off and became incredibly successful and famous and made Hustle and Flow. And then after that wanted to, you know, do something to give back to Memphis. And he just called up a lot of artists, and we were, you know, lucky enough to be among the artists that he called. So, and then, you know, it was interesting. It was kind of a unique idea of writing a storyline but allowing the actors to, play themselves and kind of come up with their own dialogue, you know, like we'd meet with them ahead of time, sort of plan out the general gist of what the dialogue would be. And so, anyway, it was my only experience really ever with acting. It was kind of fascinating.
Tears and you're crying. I get lost in a dream. Yeah, I dream to forget that I'm dying. So I had a dream. I had a big distorted dream. I couldn't see that it was crushing everything. Oh, these holes in my eyes, so polluted and blind. Pass right over the things they don't want me to find. So that beautiful dream, it just flashed on the screen. Gone in the blink of an eye, and that voice, soft and sweet, stopped its rolling and ringing and retreated to a cave in the sky. And I don't think Mrs. June will be waiting outside. No, someone told her the truth. Now she's packed up and waved goodbye.
I mean, MTV was paying for it.
Yes, yes. And we also met some MTV people and had some song placement in other shows around that same time.
Okay.
And I think $5 cover and all of that in general did, you know, boost our...
That's right. That 33 and a third song got on that My Life is Liz show.
Yeah.
Do you know about that?
Yeah.
Cool. So you got a royalty check?
I should have. I don't know. I think I got lost in the mail. Yeah.
So what are you guys up to next? If that's even, is that even a, like you spent all this time putting this thing out today. It just happened today that we're recording this. What is this? April 12th? Yeah. So the climb in the fall happened today. And you can find it where?
On the, all the digital outlets online.
Every single digital outlet that ever existed.
Yeah.
Cats
music.
Cats music. Pop tunes over on Poplar, actually.
Yeah.
Where there's a bombed out empty building that's boarded up by a historic marker. Mm-hmm. Pop tunes. Yeah, that
Tower
one.
Records.
Tower Records. Yeah, another successful
what was
model.
What was the one over there on Poplar and Highland? That
Coconuts? Remember
was River it River City Records?
No, this was
Peaches.
Like a chain. It was a
Peaches.
Chain. Peaches. It was a chain, and I feel like it was specific to Memphis.
Something spins.
Spin Street. Yeah. Oh God! I've heard that whole area is going to be demolished.
Really?
Yeah, because you know it has to be. It can't be converted into whatever failed next concept is going to happen. You physically go to a studio. You don't do stuff at your house.
I actually had Toby come over and help me set it up with like a Neumann U87 and this Neve preamps and just all of this, like, it's a good setup.
A special room.
Yeah. And then my son Leo comes in there and just turns it into his like PlayStation TV, you know, YouTube room. And
right.
I can't. And then I tried to set it back up again and then he just went back in and, you know, so
right.
Trying to figure out a way to do it at home. But yeah, the other thing about that is when I sit down and record at home, before I know it, it's like 3 or 4 in the morning. And then the next day is, you know, I feel like the older I get, the more
hours go by
like
minutes. It's crazy.
What else does Leo gotten into that you're like, well, I kind of should have, guess I put that on a higher shelf.
Not really anything. They're both pretty good kids, Leo and Jack. Yes. There's one thing we didn't talk about the string players at all.
Okay.
And I think that they really added a lot to this record. Jonathan Kirksky played on some of the stuff back in the day when we first started, and then Krista and Jonna, Krista Roten and Jonna Meisner. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Did we mention Paul Taylor?
Yeah,
Paul
we
Taylor,
did.
Like,
yeah,
he killed the drums on, like, in a good way, on a good number of the songs.
You know, Victor, I was about played. To say the funny thing about that, the Paul sessions are that Paul and I were never in the same room at the same time, or it was separated by like 10 years.
Mm.
But Paul and I have been playing together for so many years that playing on those tracks, it just felt completely normal and natural to have him as the drummer. You know, just he was the drummer of the other band I was in. You know,
right?
So it was kind of cool for me. You know, because we have a special relationship as a bass and drum combo.
Sure.
So anyway, it's really special having him on the record.
Okay, and then speaking of drummers, how many drummers have you had, or will you have?
Brian Winterode was our first drummer, and then Jeff really is, I mean, he's been the drummer since then. We, you know, some people come in and do
I was
going to
say,
Paul,
how did Paul squeeze in through Jeff and all that? Just different epochs.
That was during the Brad's Lost weekend.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Things were kind of in disarray at that period in time. When Kevin and I started working on some of these songs, it wasn't clear what, you know, whether it was going to go towards Snow Globe or what was going to happen. And so we were just kind of getting whoever to come in and play on it.
You just got the best, is all you got, you know?
Yeah. And then Ken Stringfellow, he was in town a lot back then for, playing with Big Star, I guess. And so we met him and then we just, when we did this record, sent him some stuff overseas and he added, you know, tracks to it. So he's
overseas.
He's in France.
Okay. It was a pleasure to work with you and $5 Cover. And of course I've known Brandon forever. So it's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Yeah.
Right. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
You've just heard Memphis artist and filmmaker Mike McCarthy and his co-host, Paul Woodard, a.k.a. Polly Cyclone, interviewing Brad Postlethwaite and Brandon Robertson of the Memphis group Snow Globe. Join us next time for the Black and Wyatt Records podcast.